We get things underway, though, this afternoon by welcoming to the show an author of a number of books, including Live from New York, The Complete Uncensored History of Saturday Night Live. And those guys have all the fun inside the world of ESPN. Jim Miller, also the host of the tremendous Origins podcast, and the new season, Chapter 6, is out now. And it is a 5-episode look back on the 20th anniversary of Cameron Crowe's film, Almost Famous, an absolutely wonderful movie and a great podcast. We're so happy to have Jim with us this afternoon. Jim, thanks for joining us to talk about what I agree with you is pretty much a perfect film.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I love the story you told on the podcast about showing it to your daughter. Can you share that?
Sure. I mean, look, I tried with all my kids to think about what age they were and what movies were important to show them at different points in their development. And Almost Famous was obviously on my Mount Rushmore of movies that I had to show my kids. And when it just became a question of what age was right. So when my daughter Sophie turned 12, I just decided that it was time. And lo and behold, she still considers it one of her favorites. And 3 years later, she was asking me for tickets for Coachella. So I got what I deserved. It's one of those movies that just kind of like seeps into your pores and doesn't let go.
You asked the question of yourself in the podcast, why an entire chapter on Almost Famous? And you listed 3 very good reasons for that.
Well, I mean, look, I think that the insights that the movie provides into like the world of music, the verisimilitude is just unbelievable. And, you know, it's because of that, because Cameron was literally following these bands around. And I think that anybody who really wants to understand what it was like back then to be on the road with these bands, this is a great showcase. It's a love letter to rock and roll. The second thing that I thought was really important was it's kind of a weird way of looking at journalism back then, a journalism that we don't have now. You know what I mean, Rich? Because the truth is, nobody can afford to just say to a reporter, "Hey, yeah, go spend a month on the road with the Allman Brothers," you know, and they're picking up the tab for all that stuff. I mean, the publication, and so I think that's really important. And then the third thing is this idea that just the idea of a coming of age movie and a real beautiful love story that has that can withstand the test of time. I just think all 3 of those things are clear and present with Almost Famous.
Well, you got, as Cameron Crowe says, you got the band back together. Everybody involved, cast members, Cameron Crowe. I even tracked down Penny Turnbull, the inspiration for Penny Lane. And so many insights into the making of the film, including the fact that it was almost a very different movie and a very different cast as well, starting with Brad Pitt.
Right. I mean, one of the things that I was able to get Cameron to talk about was that this, when, you know, he originally started thinking about the movie, he was thinking about Meryl Streep and the role that Frances McDormand had, Brad Pitt in the role that Billy Crudup had, and Natalie Portman in the role that Kate Hudson had. And let's face it, all 3 of those actors are brilliant, right? I mean, they're A-list. But it would have been a totally different movie. And so I thought it was really cool the way Cameron talked openly about it. And the other thing that was kind of shocking was that it wasn't like he had coffee with Brad Pitt and said, "Hey, I'm doing this, you know, kind of semi-autobiographical rock movie. Would you like to be in it?" And Brad goes, "I don't know. Let's find something else." They worked together for 4 months. Brad was really into this movie and trying to find a way into this role. And I think that that, to me, says so much about just the process of movie making and what the dynamic between a director and an actor can be. And then the idea that, you know, look, one day Brad said, "I'm out." And, you know, Cameron was devastated, as he put it. But then all of a sudden, you know, when one door closes, another one opens, and you get Billy Crudup, who was fantastic in the role.
And Billy Crudup took everything so seriously, classically trained actor, but particularly learning to play the guitar. And I thought it was very interesting how caught up he was in that, especially in shooting the concert scenes.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, look, one of the things that I quickly learned from Billy was that everybody else, I mean, when you're in a movie and a Cameron Crowe movie, I mean, look, this is Cameron's fourth movie. His third movie was this little thing called Jerry Maguire. I mean, this guy is like obviously the deep end of the pool. And so when you're in a movie and a Cameron Crowe movie, there's obviously a lot of pressure and you want to memorize your lines and think about your performance. And on top of all that, Billy had to learn how to play the guitar. And he only had like 6 weeks to learn. And thank God he had Peter Frampton and Nancy Wilson from Heart helping him, but it's still hard. And Billy was in the podcast, I think people listen and hear that he was really honest about how difficult that was for him and how sometimes that made him like miserable.
And Kate Hudson, it seems to us now 20 years out that nobody could play the role of Penny like she did. But is it safe to say she was a different type of Penny than Cameron Crowe originally had in his head?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Rich. I mean, because he was thinking about Sarah Polley, the Canadian actress, for quite some time, and she's a bit more spiritual. And in fact, when Sarah pulled out, Kate immediately said, oh my gosh, because Kate was supposed to play Anita, the sister. And when Sarah pulled out, Kate said immediately to Cameron, listen, please let me play Penny. And he initially said no. I mean, that was the first thing he said. And so it wasn't until Kate was able to kind of win him over that she got the role. And now we can't think of anybody but her.
And what a gamble to put an unknown from Utah, Patrick Fugit, in as the lead to carry your film. What was it that Cameron Crowe saw in him?
Well, I think it was the innocence. I think that he saw look, Patrick was a 15-year-old kid who was just skateboarding and hanging out with his friends, but very innocent, very intimidated about the opposite sex, you know, wasn't comfortable around girls. And I think that there was something that Cameron saw in that made him think that he could do the role. The funny thing, though, that Patrick shares in the podcast is that at one point Cameron says to him, listen, are you really into music? Because, you know, it's a movie about music. It's a natural question to ask, right? And Patrick, though, says at that point, well, I have like a Chumbawamba CD. And that was the only thing he had. And so Cameron says to him, well, do you listen to Led Zeppelin? And Patrick's response, we were cracking up when he told me, is he said, I'm not familiar with his work. Like, he thought Led Zeppelin was a guy. Like, he didn't even know it was a group. So, you know, Cameron, despite the fact that Patrick didn't have that music background, saw a bunch of other things in him, and that's what gave him, you know, the courage to get the role.
And the albums that we see passed on to him from his sister in the film, those were actually Cameron's albums.
Not only were they Cameron's albums, I'm really glad you picked up on that, Rich, but guess what? After Cameron gave Patrick the role, he said, I'm going to give you these albums, and the next time I see you, I want them oozing out of you. And so Patrick told me about taking those albums, a lot of those albums that you see in the movie that were under the bed, especially Joni Mitchell, Pet Sounds, Led Zeppelin, whatever, and he went back to Utah, and he just listened to them over and over and over again and became familiar with them. And the truth is, anybody watching the movie, it's one of those little Easter eggs for you. You know, it's a little gem because as he flips through, as young William flips through those albums right after discovering them under his bed, I mean, that's the history of rock and roll there. I mean, Cameron just made outstanding choices, and it's a beautiful collection.
We're talking with Jim Miller about his latest Origins podcast, Almost Famous Turns 20. It was such a personal film for Cameron Crowe, particularly the relationship between Elaine and William. And I was fascinated to learn that Cameron's mother was a key part of this process and very much a hands-on contributor.
Well, she was a big force in his life. She unfortunately died last summer. But she was, and, you know, she was also, people might remember her from a scene in Jerry Maguire because she was part of that women's group that meets at Renee Zellweger's house, Bonnie Hunt's house, in that movie. And she was also in Almost Famous because she's handing out the diplomas in the graduation scene where William isn't there. But the truth is that Cameron told me this funny story that he was a little, you know, it's a little awkward because he's writing a real life story and he's got his mother on the set and there's Frances McDormand playing his mother. And, you know, at some point you know, he said to her, listen, Mom, Frances McDormand has already won one Academy Award, and she really knows how to do this. So please don't try and impose yourself on her, and just let her be. And then he said, like 10 minutes later, he saw his mother just like going up to Frances and starting to talk to her and kind of buttonholing her. And afterwards, he went up to Frances and said, listen, is everything okay? And she said, yeah, look, I told your mom, it's not going to be her. It's not going to be me. It's going to be somebody else. And I thought that was like the perfect response.
How did Frances McDormand draw on her own maternal experiences to bring some truth to that role?
You know, it's an interesting question. I think that one of the things that Frances talks about in the podcast is that this was one of the first times that she played a mother. And she was actually, you know, her own son was of an age where, you know, she was really starting to feel a lot of shared sensibilities and you know, in terms of situations and stuff like that about Elaine. And so I think that it was a very interesting journey for Frances. And, of course, as we know, that Frances and Kate both got nominated for the Best Supporting Actress.
So much of what happened in the film is reflected in real life, and so many great stories, whether it's Frances using her own motherhood to draw from, or the fact that everybody on the set, everybody in the cast and the crew were very protective of Patrick as well.
Yeah, so you got, like, there's almost that moment, that line where real life blends into the movie itself, because there's Patrick Fugit, he's 15, and he's very innocent, and this is his first, you know, big movie. And so everybody on the set, as you say, was protective of him, but they were also protective of William, the character. And so there were a lot of times when Patrick would, well, there was one particular time when Patrick said a line to Kate, and he was literally, it was Patrick to Kate. It wasn't William to Penny Lane. And it was so perfect that Cameron actually wound up using it in the movie. They're talking, and he says, "Ask me again." And the way that William said it to Kate was perfect for, basically the movie. And I think that rarely happens.
Also, one of the great gems you unearthed is that one of the most memorable lines from the film from Kate Hudson was improvised, and that says a lot about her, but also about the atmosphere that Cameron Crowe created.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, look, I think it's, for people who love Almost Famous, the scene on the bus where the band starts singing Tiny Dancer, Elton John's terrific song together, is one of, you know, everybody's favorite scenes. And I think that, you know, it's amazing. I think people have been really blown away by it, but that scene, you know, where Patrick says, young William Miller says, I got to go home. And then Penny Lane looks at him and she goes, you are home. You know, that was not in the script. And I think that, as you kind of suggest, points out not only a lot about that moment, but it also points out that there's Cameron Crowe. Can you imagine working on a script for 10 years to get it right? And you finally have it right. And, you know, 90% of the people in the world directing that movie would be saying, look, we're going to say what's on the script, and then we're going to go on to the next scene because we don't have a lot of time, because he's already put so much time into the script. But there's Cameron, open to possibilities, and I think that just says so much about him as a filmmaker, that he was open to those possibilities, and look what it yielded. I mean, that is a perfect line.
Cameron talked in the podcast about William being on a journey to heal his family. Is it safe to say that the film did the same thing for Cameron Crowe and his family?
I think so. I mean, look, I think that, obviously there were certain dynamics that were different, but I do believe that, his sister wound up being more back in the fold, so to speak. And I'm not sure exactly how much the movie contributed to that or just, you know, what went on between her and her mother. But I do know that it's really interesting to hear Cameron talk about that, because at the end of the day, I mean, that's the thing about Almost Famous. It is this amazing movie about music. It is this amazing coming-of-age movie. But ultimately, I think it's a movie about, you know, a kid wanting to repair his family. And so it's a movie about the family.
We're talking with Jim Miller, and everybody who is artistic, everybody with some level of talent believes that the thing they're working on now, the next project, will be the best thing they do. But I was struck by the fact that everybody you talk to seem to realize and be fairly at peace with the fact that this may be the best thing they do in their careers.
So that's, I got to unpack that question for a second because it's really interesting the way you phrased it. Here's the thing. Not only do they wind up admitting it, but yes, the key phrase that you use and that I was astonished by is that they're at peace with it. I mean, Billy kind of joked with me and said, look, it's been 20 years, so what is that, 365 times 10 times 2? You know, I've been waiting 20 years for a script like that. And, you know, it hasn't come along, but, I mean, I've done other great things, but, like, I've never gotten a script like that. And, you know, Kate, we talked about that. I mean, sometimes when you're that young, I mean, think about this. Kate's 19, Zoe Deschanel's 19, Patrick Fugit is 16. I mean, Jason Lee has done Chasing Amy by this point, but, you know, not a huge, big role like he had in Almost Famous. And Billy was, you know, basically in the theater. So all of these people have this amazing movie that enters into their life in the year 2000, directed by Cameron. And at the same time, you know, look, they've all done great stuff since, but not at this level. And so I think that you're right to use that phrase. They seem really at peace with it, as opposed to somebody who's really bitter.
Hey, Jim, what's your favorite moment in the movie? We've all got several, but what's number one for you?
You know, it's so funny because I'm tempted to say You Are Home. I'm tempted to say the moment when Francis sees William and Anita show up on the porch, you know, when William brought his sister home and they have those incredible hugs. But I have to tell you, I think for me, it's when the very first time we see Penny Lane and Russell together, and Joni Mitchell is playing in the background. Oh. And I don't know how Kate pulled it off, but she's smiling, yet she's crying, yet she's, I mean, it's such an unbelievable moment because you know that these two people have a past, and the way that Cameron shot it, and it's not so much about dialogue, it's just this beautiful, beautiful moment that, you know, says so much.
I love the movie. It was on cable last month, and I think I watched it half a dozen more times. And then, as I told you in an email, I could have binged the entire Origins Chapter 6, all 5 episodes at once, but I wanted to take my time and savor every moment of it. Thank you.
Oh,
you did such a wonderful job. It was so great to have everybody back together. And before we let you go, just want to tease it and hope to get you back on when it comes to fruition, but your next project sounds fantastic. You're doing a history of HBO.
Right. That's a book. That's not going to be a podcast. I've done books on Saturday Night Live, ESPN, and the NCA, the Hollywood Talent Agency.
Which, by the way, were all phenomenal.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, HBO, this is a big lift because we got almost 50 years, and, you know, there's obviously great shows like Game of Thrones and Sopranos and Sex and the City and Curb Your Enthusiasm and The Wire, and there's just too many to mention. But you also have HBO Sports. You have HBO documentaries. You have things like On Demand that HBO did before anybody else, and it's a lot to report on. But I'm really loving it, and I think that one of the things that you start to see in this book, which I always love, is that yet again this is a place just like SNL was to comedy, just like ESPN was to sports television, and just like CA was to the agency business. HBO is a place of like utter disruption, and they don't kind of like take what the status quo is for granted, and in fact their mission is to basically blow it all up. And so that's really fun to report on, and not to get corny, but I feel blessed by the fact that you know, so many people are cooperating with me.
Well, we look forward to that. And once again, thanks for joining us to talk about the tremendous Origins podcast, Almost Famous Turns 20. Jim Miller, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.